Welcome to Season 5 of the Food for Your Soul podcast, where we apply the Word of God to the hearts of men and women to stoke the fires of your delight in Christ. The Bible has a lot to say about thinking. Thoughts are spiritual events, and they set the direction and determine the destiny of your life. So put on your thinking cap, because this season of the Food for Your Soul podcast is all about thinking, logic, discernment, and being transformed by the renewal of your mind.
All right. Now, when we talk about formal fallacies, we talk about denying the then, affirming the if, examples, and those are wrong because, remember, there's more than one way to get to be. Remember that? If somebody says, if I saw God with my own two eyes, that would prove he exists. I haven't seen him, therefore, there's no proof that he exists. See what they're doing? They're denying the then. That's a logical fallacy because you can't deny that you can. There's more than one way to get to be. It could be that he exists and you haven't seen him with your eyes, right? Okay. Now, one more logical formal fallacy, and that is confusing correlation with causation. And this, I think this has got to win the award for the most common logical fallacy on the news. When you hear the news reported, this just happens all the time. Just because two things are correlated does not mean one caused the other. Just because you can establish a relationship between two things doesn't mean one caused the other. You can do a scientific study. You know, you hear this all the time. You'll hear somebody come on the news and they'll say, well, there's a study that says 90% of the time when this happens, this other thing happens. And then they just assume that the one causes the other. But if you just think about that, you could do a scientific study on the Star-Spangled Banner. And in my experience, I've found that 95% of the time, the Star-Spangled Banner is played, it causes a sporting event to take place. Right? Immediately afterwards. You see the error? Just because there's a correlation doesn't mean one causes the other. Somebody said, if I drink scotch and soda, I get drunk. If I drink whiskey and soda, I get drunk. If I drink rum and soda, I get drunk. So I'm going to give up soda. No. I was in a church where Calvinism was taught very strongly and real strong. And never once in this church did they make even the slightest effort toward ever winning the lost. And somebody might be in a context like that and say, see, Calvinism diminishes people's enthusiasm towards winning a loss. Well, that's not a valid argument. It fails because there's no evidence that one caused the other. It could be that they are Calvinists and lazy. And the real cause of them not evangelizing isn't their Calvinism, but their laziness. Recently, somebody used this argument, the other side of this argument, with their talk to me. They said that my view on apostasy was wrong because they were in a church where they believed that same view, and she said, I watched it destroy that church. It completely destroyed the church. The doors are shut now. Then I probed a little further. Turns out the pastor also was caught and arrested for soliciting a prostitute and wasn't repentant. And she did admit that that may have been a contributing factor, too. But you see the point. Just because one thing happens and another thing happens doesn't mean one causes the other. When somebody uses poor reasoning in a debate, you know that it's poor reasoning, but you can't quite put your finger exactly on what's wrong with the reasoning. Very often it's productive to use the same reasoning to arrive at a conclusion that your opponent won't agree with. So you don't have to point out exactly what the error is. You can just use an example, and he'll see that it's invalid reasoning when it's used against him. So if somebody uses that argument with you, they say, yeah, I saw someone, they believed that, destroyed the church. You find out something that they believe. You believe, you know, what do you believe? You believe in pre-trib? Okay. I knew a guy that once believed in pre-trib, and he committed adultery. Left his wife and kids. And now he lives an immoral life. Once you think you're exempt from the tribulation, all bets are off. You can do anything. You know, I mean, you can see, if you use the argument against a person, then they can see that there's a fallacy involved, even if you don't know exactly what the fallacy is. And as I said, I think it's an extremely common fallacy. I remember a big front page headline several years back on a new study that showed a physiological difference in the brain of a homosexual and a heterosexual. And the activists were dancing in the streets over that. And it was amazing to read the article because the writer of the article just assumed that this constituted absolute proof that homosexuals are the way they are because they were born that way. Just because there's a physiological difference in the brain. And then the people that were arguing it, the people that were against homosexuals, the idea that homosexuals are born that way, were arguing, saying, no, there's not a difference in the brain. As if our argument was dependent on that. Listen, if there's a physiological difference in the brain, all that shows is a correlation. It doesn't show causation. It could be that the homosexual lifestyle caused a physiological change in the brain, right? And that's why they have the difference. Or maybe there's a third factor that causes both. Like maybe people that go through some specific certain kind of trauma in childhood tend to have a result of having that physiological difference in the brain and, homosexuality. I mean, there's a whole host of things that we don't know that are possibilities, but just because there's a correlation between two things doesn't prove anything. And the most, one of the most common times examples of hearing this error is when people talk about the cause of crime. What causes crime? What would you say if you asked someone in the media, what is the cause of crime, the biggest cause of crime? What do you think they would say? Poverty, right. Poverty. And how do they prove that? They prove it by pointing out that whenever you go to the poor neighborhoods, you have lots and lots of crime. And the poorer the neighborhood, the more the crime. Now, is that a proof? No, it's a correlation. There's a correlation between poverty and crime. But does the poverty cause crime? Well, the answer is no. They've disproven that by showing that when you have a father in the home, even in the poorest areas, when there's a father in the home, there's a low crime level. So the crime seems to be more caused by fatherlessness. When there's not a father in the home, there tends to be a high level of crime. And guess what else happens when there's not a father in the home? High level of poverty. So it's not that the poverty causes the crime, it's just the poverty and the crime are caused by a third. How about this one? Ever since the advent of TV, literacy rate has declined. Therefore, television causes illiteracy. But you have to show more of an argument than just that premise. Now, maybe you can. But maybe the advent of television also happened to occur right at about the same time that they gave up on classical education approach. And that's the chief cause of the decline in literacy. It's a lot of factors. And if we isolate it down just because there's a correlation, then we've made an error. Okay. And this particular error is just absolutely the foundation of almost all church planting and church growth techniques. I mean, you just want to see this example. Examples is all you have to do is get any church growth book. Like they'll say, 90% of churches that are over 100 in attendance at their launch are extremely successful. 90% of churches that are under 100 at their launch never get over 100 and they falter. They usually close their doors. Now, the assumption that absolutely every single book comes to because of that statistic is, therefore, you need to be over 100 before you publicize the launch. But what about this? Isn't it possible that the ones who are over 100 at their launch are over 100 because they're well-organized and they've got a good ministry going? And that's also the reason why they're successful? And the ones that are under 100, very often they're under 100 because of lack of organization, and that's also a reason why they tend not to be successful? You can explain the statistic other ways than just drawing a cause-effect relationship. So we need to watch out for assuming causation when all there is correlation. And you see it a lot in statistics, especially with church growth. And the thing you have to understand about church health is a church is a complex organism. There's hundreds and hundreds of factors involved in how healthy a church is. And you can't just isolate, say, oh, that church, they have two songs, then a sermon, then two songs, and they're healthy. And this church, they have three songs before the sermon, and they're faltering. And so, you got to have the two songs. Obviously, there's other factors involved besides just the songs. Right? They do that with contemporary worship all the time.
Okay, a couple things to watch out for in this whole area of correlation versus causation in today's news. When you listen to the news, every time you hear studies show or there's a new study or statistic or there's a poll or any kind of statistics like that, really pay attention. Think hard. When they show a correlation, usually they won't even tell you. They just imply the causation part. They say, well, there's a correlation between this and this, and then the way they talk about it, they act as though it's obvious that one caused the other. So when you hear conclusions like that, really think. Just say, wait a second. They gave that statistic. Does that really prove that one caused the other, or could be that, could there be a third cause that caused them both, or could they be just unrelated with regard to cause or something like that? But be discerning when you hear those statistics. The other area is with all the end of the world folks. Right now, it's climate change that's going to be the end of the world. And I'll tell you, there's no end to the disaster predictions from the environmentalists. I remember when I was a little kid, they were saying we were going to be, by the time I was out of high school, the whole world would be 10 feet deep in garbage because we're running out of space to deal with all our garbage. And they talked about that there was going to be an ice age. And they said the world was going to be destroyed by the ozone hole if we didn't get rid of hairspray and styrofoam cups. And it was air pollution, and then it was toxins. I remember the one that, out of all these things, the one that really scared me the most for whatever reason is topsoil. I remember when I was in high school, I read this thing about how we were running out of topsoil. It's all running off and going into the ocean or something. And by the time I was in my mid-20s, there would be no topsoil left. We wouldn't be able to grow any food. And it just sounded like a certain disaster that was going to happen, and there was no stopping it. And they said the bees are all dying, the cell phones are killing the bees, and that's going to destroy the ecosystem, and global warming, climate change. On the global warming, they said that all scientists are in agreement that our coastal cities will be underwater by the year 2000. Now we're 20 years past that, and they still haven't given up on their models. So when it comes to all the doom and gloom stuff, first of all, don't fall for it in the first place. Those are just scare tactics in their efforts to try to gain more political control and more restrictions and gain more money for their funding and all the rest. It's always arising out of junk science. So don't fall for it in the first place. But the thing that it has to do with this issue of correlation and causation is this. Most of the time, people don't even remember their predictions because by the time their predictions don't come true, they're on to another catastrophe that they're predicting. So when they say by the year 2000, there's going to be an ice age, well, when 2000 comes along, we don't have all these people saying, hey, it didn't happen. Look at these predictions failed. Nobody even remembers those predictions because there's been five more disaster predictions since then, and everybody's caught up with those. But the other thing they do, if anybody does point out that the predictions don't come to fruition, they'll claim it's because of all their protesting. So they'll say, yeah, the cities would have been underwater by the year 2000, but all of our protesting and all our actions and that we took to get rid of global warming and eliminating Freon and all that, see, it worked. It worked. Right now they're saying we only have 12 years left before the world comes to an end if we don't do something about climate change. 12 years from now, they'll say, see, all our efforts worked. We see that very thing right now with the riots that are going on. They start rioting because they want justice on the police officer that killed George Floyd. And then that officer ends up being arrested within like 3 days, which is the fastest. I mean, justice never moves that fast. He's already arrested 3 days. Not long after that, the other officers are arrested. And so you ask those people, you say, I thought you said the system was broken and these people would never be arrested. They'd get off scot-free and all that. And they say, oh, no, it's only because of our riots that those people were arrested. See, it worked. So what are they doing? They're saying the riots happened and then the guys got arrested. Therefore, the riots caused the officials to decide to go ahead with the arrests. But they don't know that. There's no proof of any causation, just correlation. For all they know, those arrests would have happened in the exact same amount of time, whether there had been riots or not. This happened with the whole impeachment thing with Donald Trump and the Ukraine. They said he was doing something wrong by withholding aid from Ukraine, and then he ended up giving the aid to Ukraine. And they say, see, our whistleblower put pressure on him, and that's what caused him to give the aid to Ukraine. And they just ignore any other factors that may have contributed to that decision. We always want to think the things that we do are the cause of good outcomes. But just because a good outcome happens after our efforts does not prove that the efforts caused the outcome. I'll just give you one last example. I just heard it on the news today. There has been a resurgence of COVID cases in several states, and people on the left are saying, see, we told you reopening was a bad idea. We tried to open the economy, and now that caused a resurgence. And the people on the right are saying, look at all these protests. All these protesters are out there without masks, and they're violating all the rules, and that's what's causing the resurgence. Both sides want to assume that it was their politics that can explain what happened, when in reality, we don't know. All we know is there's a resurgence. Actually, the way things have been reported, I don't even know if we can know that for sure. The reporting on this has been so unreliable and skewed, but even assuming there is a resurgence, all we know is that it happened. We don't know what caused it. It could be that it's related to the riots and the protesting. It could be it's related to the reopening. And it could be that the virus would have just behaved that way no matter what we did. But the mere fact that this happened and then that happened does not mean A, cause B. All right, so I hope you can make it back tomorrow. We're going to talk about self-refuting arguments. Those are the most fun. See you then.
Thank you for listening. We pray you're finding this season helpful. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. Just go to the treasuringgod.com website and click on Contact. There's also a giving tab on that site. We are a crowdfunded ministry, so if you would like this podcast to continue, please consider supporting us with a tax-deductible gift. Just go to treasuringgod.com and click on Give. Until next time, rejoice in the Lord always and set your mind on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God.